And welcome to another episode of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
And I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who, when you type in Rasheed Wallace May 4th in the internet, nothing comes up, Katie. What's going on here? What's with the search engine optimization? What's happening? I feel like we've been bamboozled by Google here. I'm now two pages into this. I've been scrolling for a good 2 minutes trying to find something good, and I can't find anything. Except, however, I've landed on it here, Katie. I've landed on it this day. In 2020, Rasheed Wallace gave a quote to Yahoo Sports saying the words, "I just love Portland, man, for real," talking about it's been 16 years since he was in the city, yet he still holds a deep love for it. Obviously, Rasheed Wallace has been very active in the Michigan, Detroit area, Flint, Michigan, of course, with the water crisis. But for you, what do you think is like the most sort of Rasheed Wallace-ass city of all the teams he played for? He played for the Knicks, he played for the Celtics, of course. You've got the Bullets in there, Washington, D.C., you've got Detroit, and you've got Portland. What do you think is the most Sheed town of all of them, Katie?
I think the man fits in everywhere, to be honest. I imagine he found things he really loved in each city. I associate him most closely with Detroit and the Pistons, but, you know, I'm not trying to like pigeonhole him to where he's from. So I feel like different places can reflect us at different eras in our lives, much like different teams to different basketball players at different points in their career. How about that?
Mm-hmm. There you go. I will say an interesting thing about Sheed is that he is notably from Philadelphia, but unlike a lot of other Philly players who seem very, very tied to Philly and like that's all they talk about, Sheed really doesn't seem to be like a pronounced like I'm a Philly dude. Like Kyle Lowry, his whole like persona is built around it. The Morris twins, you can name any other Philadelphia player. It really does seem like a town that people are very proud to be from, but Sheed doesn't seem to claim it with the same ferocity as others.
That's true. But it's also another place I can see him, like, you know, I can see reflected in him and vice versa.
Totally.
No, it's the duality of Sheed, I guess.
Let me ask you this, Kate. He never played for the Sixers. He probably would have been an absolute fan favorite considering he's Rasheed fucking Wallace and he's from Philly. But I do wonder, one of the interesting things, since we last spoke, our beloved Toronto Raptors have been eliminated from the playoffs. And my favorite thing was the post-game after Game 6 in Toronto, in which all the Sixers players more or less admitted that they're terrified of the Philly crowd and did not want to go back to Philly for a Game 7 because of said crowd. Do you think Sheed would have gotten along with the Sixers crowd, or do you think he would have gotten tired of their fragile, sort of wild oscillations in mood bullshit, in short order?
Like now or at the time? Because I feel like at the time it was probably a little bit different, you know?
A little less process poisoned, yeah, yeah.
I think he would have been able to handle it. You know, mm-hmm. He had to handle mm-hmm. worse from fans in his career, certainly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he'd be able to deal with it.
Yeah, I feel like he'd probably just start talking back to the fans. And then they, as, you know, recognizing his Philliness, would be like, well, shit, maybe he's right. Maybe we should shut up. So, frankly, Sheed playing for the Sixers could have saved us from the plight that we endure now with Sixers fans being what they are.
Potentially. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of fan favorite players, Katie, on today's show, we are going to talk about a specific fan favorite who had himself one of the highlights, maybe the highlight play of his NBA career this week in game one of the Suns Mavericks series. We're going to talk about JaVale McGee and kind of do a career retrospective on him. Not that it's over by any means. He's playing for the number one seed in the Western Conference and playing a pretty prominent role, but he has had a very circuitous career, very fun and interesting and sort of many layers to that onion. So we're going to just do a JaVale McGee retrospective episode. We've never really done this before, kind of just talking about a specific guy, but maybe this can be a model for podcasts going forward. We've also got the usual fun stuff like the segment we're trying out this week. We've got a pretty fun little game in the hopper for that. But before we dive in, Katie, we'd be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity with us having a platform like we do to discuss what's going on with the U.S. Supreme Court right now and their rumored leaked potential overturning of the Roe v. Wade decision from 1973, which would essentially abolish abortion rights for women in the United States. It's a really, really shitty time, and it's been building to this for quite a while down in the States, but with the leak this week through Politico, it has been front and center, of course, and just wanted to use the opportunity today to encourage people to do what you can. And in this case, really, there's not a whole lot that can be done, you know, in terms of like going to dismantle the institutions that create all of the problems in America, but you can donate your money and your time, and specifically your money can be donated to the Act Blue network of pro-choice groups that they have. That's where I've donated. You can donate to a bunch of different other ones as well, but this spreads your donation out around a ton of charities that are in states that have trigger laws that if the Roe v. Wade decision is overturned, it would immediately institute anti-abortion laws in, I think, 13 states. So just wanted to just point out that you can go there. 15 states. Okay.
Yeah, wow. It's 15. And I do want to just correct what you said. It wouldn't overturn. The overturning of Roe v. Wade wouldn't automatically make or criminalize abortion laws for across the United States as a whole.
Correct.
It would essentially
make the
jurisdiction of those laws down state to state. So already there are states who said so there's 15 in place now who have the trigger laws, as you mentioned. So as soon as Roe v. Wade is overturned, which looks like it would happen in June, and it doesn't seem like that because this was leaked, it still doesn't seem like this is a decision that will be rushed. So there is still time for organizers, which I guess is one small silver lining in terms of, as you mentioned, donating to abortion funds and networks that will be put in place to help women who are in those states where it's now criminalized, or in some cases there's I don't know what the correct term for is for this, but essentially snitch laws. So if you knew a woman was going to seek an abortion out of state, you could rat on her and she could potentially face a jail sentence for
the
that.
The phrasing literally used in Texas with their anti-abortion law, there are the term is bounty hunters, which is extremely fucked up. Mm-hmm.
And there's other states, as I understand it, that will kind of look to put their own trigger laws in place. But it's roughly half. It seems like it's going to be half of if you look at the states considering it now, I know Indiana is one of them, and some of them more like Midwestern states. It will be half of all the states in the United States. It's probably going to fall down on party lines and which states are Republican versus Democratic. So it's important to donate to, I would say, funds, but funds that can kind of show if they have where the money goes and how they support networks for women, in terms of safe travel and safe access to abortion, because as we know, upending rights to anyone's reproductive rights doesn't mean that abortion is outlawed. It just means safe abortion is outlawed, and
exactly.
Women will still seek out abortions in whatever ways they can and deem necessary. And some of that's going to lead to higher mortality rates, obviously. And the women that are predominantly affected in cases like that are women from, lower income situations who can't actually afford to travel and go out of state or take time off work even to do what it takes to get an abortion. So I have seen some people say as good as Planned Parenthood, it can be on a kind of location to location basis, to not necessarily donate money to Planned Parenthood as a whole, because it isn't necessarily clear how that trickles down as needed, to some of their locations. That's just something I saw from someone who's much more informed than I am in terms of what's going on in the States. Obviously, we're Canadian, but I will say it's a little bit more arm's length from I'd say certainly our politics in Canada, but it is not protected. It's not a protected right, in Canada. And it's still very difficult for women, especially in a lot of the maritime provinces. For a while, there was no abortion clinics in PEI, or I think New Brunswick. I think they only existed in Nova Scotia. And it's still quite difficult. Like, it's still very, very difficult. So it's one thing to kind of turn to the States and be like, wow, it's certainly like post-apocalyptic times there, which I agree with. It's certainly on a decline. But, you know, stuff like this is also a good opportunity to kind of look, if you're listening from Canada, which I guess I just assume a lot of people are. But to like,
I think most of our listeners are actually American. So,
well, guys, I'm feeling for you. But if you're in Canada, like, you know, to turn inward and look at what we got. We have a conservative leadership in Ontario, right? Like, one of our considered most like left-ish, not really though, like not in Toronto proper. I'd say also not in generally most of Ontario. Anyway, there's a lot of conservative leaders now in power in Canada. So, you know, it's a good time to try and shore up our own access to reproductive rights here too. So just some food for thought. I think it's important to talk about it. I know it can be uncomfortable for some people. We'd also be remiss if we didn't say that, like, it really sucks that this is still something that's kind of treated as, just because you're not an expert doesn't mean you don't or shouldn't talk about it, or because it makes you uncomfortable, you shouldn't talk about it. And I think, you know, obviously we try and do that, you and I, Sean, when we talk about anything like happening in basketball that kind of reaches outside of the NBA. We've done that in the past, and this is no exception. Like, this doesn't just impact women. And I feel like you're a real moron if that's what you think. So it's important to like flag this where you can. And I hope we see like other NBA strictly focused podcasts or, you know, people with platforms talking about this. I've seen some, which has been nice, but then there's always this sense of like, well, I did it once. I mean, doing it once is certainly better than not doing it at all. But the thing is, like, this isn't going away, and a lot of people's lives are going to be, I don't know, made substantially more dangerous, difficult.
People will die. Like, that's like, it's the, like, the brass tacks of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, to your point of, you know, you don't have to be an expert to talk about it. I just painted with entirely too broad strokes in introducing the thing to begin with. And then you corrected me rightly. And that's good. That makes us all better and smarter as we go forward here. And to your point, like, there is currently an elected official who is in a jurisdiction like 20 minutes away from my own, who is a 24-year-old homeschooled fucking slimeball, who said he wants
that
to make abortion.
Creep.
He is a fucking creep. Sam Oosterhoff, write him and tell him he's a piece of shit. But yeah, he said he wants to make abortion, quote unquote, unthinkable in our lifetime. So it happens here too. We're not immune from it. And so really wanted to just take the opportunity off the top here. Do your research, figure out the places to donate. I just highlighted the Act Blue campaign, and because they have the sort of network of groups that are in all of the states with those trigger laws. secure.actblue.com/donate/abortion fund is where you can go and donate. And it would be very cool if you have the means to see people do that on our account. All right, Katie, shall we move forward here? We're going to dig into JaVale McGee. We're going to talk about the segment we're trying out this week. We've got our posters of the week and all that good stuff. That's coming up in just a second here as we get things rolling on this week's basketball. All right, Katie, we've reached the thing we're talking about this week, and that thing is not a thing, but a person this week, Katie. A couple nights ago during game one of the Phoenix Suns game against the Dallas Mavericks, game one, the Suns picked up a big win, and in the fourth quarter of that game, maybe the highlight of one JaVale McGee's career was achieved when, guarding Luka Doncic in isolation, he very nonchalantly poked the ball free from his grasp, took it the other way, did a little no-look, sort of fake head fake to pass it to the guy he was running in transition with, and went up for a dunk. It was delightful, Katie. It was wonderful to see JaVale have a moment like that on a stage like that. And
I know JaVale has been a favorite of yours for sure. He's someone who we've, you know, talked about on this podcast in the past before too. But I started doing a little bit of digging yesterday into JaVale McGee's career. And it's just a very rich tapestry, Katie. And a person that I think is worth kind of devoting an entire segment of the show to. So we're just going to talk about JaVale, talk about his career, talk about his arc, go from the beginning to where he is now, talk about the different iterations and eras of his career, and, you know, just sort of hash it all out. It's like a prolonged remembering of a guy who is still very much with us in the NBA and very well could go and win another NBA championship this year. But Katie, let's begin, I suppose, with the question I have for you is, what does JaVale McGee mean to you? Like, what is your sort of experience of watching him been throughout his NBA career from all the way back in 08 with the Wizards to where he is now with the Suns?
I love him. I think JaVale is just he's a bright light in the league. He is like such a positive force no matter what team he's been on. I don't really look, I guess he's a role player, but he winds up doing so much more, I think, on every team that he's been on, whether that's just in the locker room. I mean, even the teams that he's been on for not that long have still talked. Like, I'm thinking of the Cavs most recently. I know he wasn't in Denver. I guess he wasn't really in Denver.
Not in his second stint. He was there for a while with his first stint.
Yeah, in his first stint. But, you know, these like shorter stints that he's with teams, like they talk about how impactful he was, whether that's in the locker room, you know, and just kind of like his overall vibes. He's a good vibe bringer. But I also think he's really funny. He's extremely smart. He's super creative. He's got like a wonderful like family story. His mom's a legend. His sister's also a legend. I think I like how he sort of seeks the legendary status in his family to them, you know, and he's still a three-time NBA champion himself. Mm-hmm. He's got one of the cutest, and I don't like talking about other people's kids. Like, I don't know, because I feel like it's a little bit creepy,
sure.
But he legitimately has one of the cutest children I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. He's just, I love JaVale. He's a Olympic gold medalist too.
Yeah. Three-time NBA champion, went back-to-back with the Warriors and then with the Lakers in the bubble. Olympic champion from just this past summer, right? We went with 2020 Tokyo. Right. Yeah, I guess that was 2021 when they actually played those games.
I know, but yeah. I don't know when it was.
Yeah, who's to say? There have been like two Olympics in the last 4 months, it seems, yet also no Olympics in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's, you know, he kind of has a similar sort of career tale to a lot of the guys that I think are kind of our faves, Katie, like the guys who sort of meander about their careers and then sort of find a spot and maybe it sticks. But, you know, it's less of a sort of situation that you'll see with like a typical star player, or maybe it takes a couple stops for him to really take off and then it's sort of a long-standing appearance with one team. It's more of a sort of, he just dabbles in all these sorts of different stops, and there's been very, I think, kind of clearly defined eras for him as well, and that makes it such an interesting sort of journey to go back with. So let's go back to the beginning, shall we? JaVale McGee drafted in 2008, first round, 18th overall by the Washington Wizards, and he plays for some very weird and not very good Washington Wizards teams, Katie. The first game he played, I pulled up his box score from his very first game, October 29th, 2008. He plays a total of, he plays a total of 9 minutes in the game, doesn't score a point, goes 0-4, is a -6, whatever, that's fine. But like the teammates he's rolling out there with, Caron Butler, Anton Jameson, like very near the end, Deshaun Stevenson, still yet to kind of achieve his LeBron-stopping destiny with the Mavericks. You got Antonio Daniels, I think someone you've interviewed, Etan Thomas, am I mistaken
yes.
in that?
Yes.
You got Andre Blatch, Nick Young, JaVale McGee is like the trio that's the future coming off the bench. Just a weird, weird Wizards team, and a team that does not go on to a whole lot of success. And they really don't have much success in those first few years. They're 19-63 in JaVale's rookie season. The following year, they go 26-56. And then the year after that, they go, what is it here? They go 23-59. And these teams, Katie, really kind of coincide with sort of like the jokiest parts of that Wizards era, and in some cases kind of dark parts, like the Gilbert Arenas, Javaris Crittenden stuff, Arenas putting poop into people's shoes, just like a pretty cursed franchise. And I honestly kind of think JaVale's career probably feels a lot different if it's not kind of poisoned by the Wizards for the first 3 years. Because, you know, this is kind of where like the whole Shaqton a fool thing was established, it seems. Those Wizards teams were really, really bad, consistently bad. And, you know, they never really sort of cashed in on like, oh, well, the new wave of the future is Nick Young, JaVale McGee, Andre Blatch, baby. That never really stuck. And so you ended up with that sort of just sort of like gross pall hanging over those Wizards teams. And it wasn't really until JaVale goes to the Nuggets for the 2012-13 season, where the Nuggets kind of start becoming pretty good, that he really kind of, I think, establishes himself, despite also kind of being still a star of Shaqton a fool all the time. He got traded there in the middle of the 2011-12 season, and then goes on to play parts of three seasons with the Denver Nuggets beyond that. So
I will say that that was like a weird time in the NBA in general. Like, he was also there during the lockout.
Yeah.
There's just the like Beatles. A lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would also say just like the general attitude, I think, towards NBA players at that time was like, there was a lot of animosity, it feels like, from like, whether it's from media, fans, you know, like general perception. Like, I think it was certainly shifting over to be like wholly more positive. Again, it's not positive across the board now, but certainly a little bit better. And I feel like he was caught up a little bit, you know, in the tail end of that.
Yeah. Like, that was the sort of, I think LeBron, I mean, my sort of interest in the league waned at that time too, right? Like, I think I, as like an 18-year-old, was a little bit stunned by the LeBron to the Heat thing and the sort of, we're going to win not one, not two, not three, whatever. And people got pretty upset at the player empowerment sort of era beginning there. People have calmed on it recently. And, you know, again, there's still issues with it and people get upset about shit. But for the most part, I think most people realize like, oh, it's actually good that these players have this agency and all that. And like, JaVale's never been in the class of team or player to, you know, go and choose his next destination and, you know, sort of change the title contention window with it. But I do think there was probably just sort of a general, you know, angst and eagerness to denigrate players during that time in a way that maybe it's a little bit more celebratory these days. So he goes on to the Nuggets. 2012-13 is like the really good season where they win 57 games. George Karl is coach of the year. He gets fired after the season, which is hilarious. Masai Ujiri also put that team together and goes to the Raptors after this season too. But JaVale's pretty good on this team. He puts up good numbers on a team that had a bunch of guys putting up good numbers.
I'll just say it's funny that Masai put that team together and that Masai also fired Dwayne Casey after he won coach of the year.
Yep, yep. He's a man who doesn't fuck around, as it turns out. But yeah, JaVale on that team finishes eighth in scoring, plays 79 games all at the bench, 9 points, 4.8 boards, kind of becomes like an established, like real sort of recognized, oh yeah, this guy's just a good NBA player after kind of toiling with the Wizards there for a while. It's an interesting thing, Katie, because I didn't know this for sure. I just, for some reason in my brain, I had like a, oh, JaVale like went to Europe for a year or two, right? Then came back. For some reason, that was in my head. I might have been thinking Andre Blatch, actually. Sort of similar sort of vibes. But yeah, for some reason, I had this sort of blind spot on JaVale. And it's kind of around this like late Wizards, early Nuggets period. Again, I wasn't like a hugely into the NBA for those couple seasons in like 2011-12 anyway. So it's probably just that sort of knowledge hole coming through here. But, you know, he feels like a guy who went to Europe and came back anew. He wasn't that at all. To the Shaqtin a Fool thing, Katie, I want to add, because this is like right around, I just, before we came on here, I watched a video of like a 9-minute Best of Shaqtin a Fool JaVale McGee edition, and it's wonderful. It's super funny. I think JaVale, you know, he's interviewed a couple times within it, like with the guys and inside the NBA. Some of it's mean-spirited and you don't like that, but I think my favorite part is the number of times JaVale screws up and then they pan over to George Karl losing his mind. And to me, I'm very happy that JaVale McGee is the kind of guy who made George Karl in particular irritated, because that guy seems like a miserable asshole. So part of my like love of JaVale McGee is the fact that he angered George Karl at one point, and I think that's cool. Do you have like recollections of McGee's time with the Nuggets around here? And I guess if you have any comments on the Shaqtin a Fool stuff, we sort of hit on it a little bit there, but you can feel free to sort of go off on that too if you want.
I don't like, because didn't JaVale say, he's like, I wish they'd stop like focusing on me so much, basically.
It was a circuitous thing. I think it started off as he didn't like it, and then he sort of got sort of
right,
bought into it, I would say.
Okay. Actually, the one thing that I can't believe we forgot is also, when he was in the dunk contest that Blake Griffin robbed from everyone with his Kia stunt. Because JaVale was really good in that dunk contest. That was a great dunk contest. Aside from the double dunk was amazing. The stupid Kia thing. So I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. I'd say this era, maybe, of JaVale was sort of the springboard into what he was going to become. You know, like you were kind of starting to see, as you mentioned, just how impactful he could be, the type of player he was going to be. I think it probably helped him, as it seems to help most players, get off the Wizards, you know, and go somewhere else in the league. But I don't like them picking on him. I mean, I'm glad he's fine with it. He's got a great sense of humor, but I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I found a passage here, Katie. This is a quote from a podcast that he did with Shannon Sharp in 2017 or so. Either way, he was on a podcast with Shannon Sharp. And I was wrong. He did actually, you were correct in your first inkling that he was bothered by it. The quote that he had from this podcast was, quote, "The thing about that whole Shaqtin a Fool era of when I was on there is I didn't realize what I was doing in my career until I got started and started to move on to other teams. And I would talk to other coaches, and in the middle of the year, they'd be like, I've always seen that Shaqtin a Fool stuff and had a different mental review. And I never knew you're a smart kid. You're extremely vocal. You're a great basketball player. It was slowly chipping away at my reputation as a young 24-year-old athletic basketball player, young, excited. It was just slowly chipping away." The piece goes on to say he engaged Shaq in a Twitter beef during his first season with the Warriors in 2017 and found allies in superstar Kevin Durant and coach Steve Kerr. Kerr later admitted that he had a preconceived notion about McGee and was proven wrong. So, yeah, the Shaqtin a Fool stuff did, in fact, sit with him. And, yeah, that's a bummer. I would hope that there's the thing, though. I guess it sort of is like your view of like what kind of basketball player you like, right? And I feel like maybe we have a slightly different taste in the type of player we like. I like a player who makes a lot of mistakes and sort of like still is good despite them. You know what I mean? Like that shit rocks to me. A guy who is so clearly hilariously talented and, you know, is this sort of hyper-athletic big man who can be in the dunk contest and everything and can be on these good teams, which he's proven he can be. The fact that he also had all of these sort of very obvious flaws and like over-ambition on the floor that led to all these things that took place and were used on Shaqtin a Fool, like that doesn't denigrate JaVale McGee to me, at least. I can see why it might to a coach or something like that, but as a viewer of the league, that stuff rocks to me. Like that I want more players who do stuff like that. And, you know, we can kind of put together a classic highlight clip of it, because like, who has the last laugh? The dude's got 3 titles and an Olympic gold and has been playing for 14 NBA seasons. Like, clearly he's doing something right, even if he has these very sort of viral moments of failure.
Yeah, I feel like the stuff that gets on or got on Shaqtin a Fool, wasn't it just guys being maybe a little too effortful?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, there's one where he falls down and, like, tries to throw a no-look pass from the ground. Like, that's cool. Yeah, I don't know.
You're just trying. And, like, these are the things that he would actually probably... Yeah, I'd say he would go on to hone and get better at and, like, now can probably throw a no-look pass while, like, diving for the ball, you know, to save it from going out of bounds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good for him.
Hell yeah. Then he goes on after the Nuggets era, he goes on to play for a whole whack of teams. And he's just kind of been this like mercenary brought into contenders these last few years. You know, 2015-16, he's on the Mavericks for a little bit after or he gets traded, I think, at the deadline. No, he just plays a small amount of games.
Waived.
Just 34 games.
He was waived.
Yeah.
And I'll never. It's just like fucking another ghouls. Reason to dislike the Mavs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also part of the Process Sixers story as well, Katie. He played six games for the Sixers after being traded there from Denver in the 2014-15 season and then was waived as well. Yeah, gets waived by the Mavericks. And like that could have honestly maybe been the end, right? Like there's plenty of careers where you play eight seasons, you get waived after, you know, your eighth year or whatever, and you just never latch on with the team. You know, he wasn't terribly prolific in that season with the Mavericks before he did get waived. But then the Warriors come along in 2016-17, a team that has brought in Kevin Durant and really doesn't have many options in terms of filling out the rest of the roster. And so they do the turn to minimum salary guys thing. And they bring in JaVale, and he's a legitimate contributor to two championship teams. He plays 77 games, starts 10 in the 16-17 year. Maybe the best basketball team ever assembled. Pretty fucking cool feather in JaVale's cap that he's on that team. And then 17-18 as well, he is quite good. He plays 65 games, starts 17 for that team as well. And as Steve Kerr said, kind of flipped the reputation to the point where he really hasn't been on a non-contender since, outside of the Cavs for a brief stint at the start of the 2020-21 season. What do you make of this sort of era of JaVale? Of course, in 2018-19, he's very good over the course of 75 games for a bad Lakers team that misses the playoffs. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing, but he goes for 12 points and 8 boards a game. He shoots 62% from the field. You know, he has a really, really excellent season, starting 62 of 75 games, and then starts every game in the regular season and 10 of 14 in the playoffs for the 10 of the 14 games he played in the playoffs. For the or 11 of the 14, that is, for the championship Lakers in 2019-20. So look, the basketball reference, hard to read sometimes. There's lots of numbers here.
I know. that was confusing to me.
It was confusing to me too. Don't worry. My question is to you, what is your sort of impression of like contender era JaVale? It is a very stark difference from those extremely non-serious early years with Washington. It's pretty cool that this is sort of the evolution of his career. And like, he's at the point now where, you know, as like a backup big for teams that are otherwise capped out, he's kind of become the go-to answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good testament to, I wouldn't say that like the start of his career by his hand was like bad. It was, again, no. I think a lot of like where he was, what teams were after at that time. Like they weren't necessarily constructing teams the way they are now. You're not looking for like a backup big of this kind of caliber. You know what I mean? I think it just shows that like, again, he just understood what he's best at and he's been able to capitalize on that. But I would also say what he's best at is just fitting in anywhere, a bit like a social chameleon, you know. And I think establishing like really meaningful relationships in locker rooms and being a kind of like a steadying, especially on that first season he was with the Lakers, like that was a young team still, you know, and kind of being like a steadying hand and like a bit probably like a cheerful ballast, you know, not to say he's, I hate when you say that a player is like cheerful or fun or happy. My brain immediately feels like I have to qualify it with being like, I don't mean they're unserious about
right,
basketball.
Right.
I don't want to do that anymore because
yeah,
they're in the NBA. They're probably
they're very clearly serious, it seems.
Basketball. That should just be like a blanket understanding. Anyway, I kind of wanted to see him stay with the Cavs, but whatever, that didn't really happen. But I very much like his fit now with the Suns. I did like him with the Lakers team. He was great with the Warriors, obviously. But I think with the Suns, you're even seeing now, like, he's like kicking it up a notch, I think, in terms of the skill set he's able to show on the floor. I mean, you flagged it for me, Sean, but like you sent me that clip of him stealing the ball from Luka. And I think players like Luka and like a lot of superstars they shouldn't, but I feel like in that moment, really underestimated JaVale. I don't know if you're like, oh, he's just like, he's a bench backup. Like, he's not going to be able to strip the ball away from me. But you can see JaVale is just staring at, he's not looking at Luka. He's watching the ball and he's just like counting. He's like, okay, he's not changing his rhythm. So when it comes back again, I'm just going to like almost like look lazily slapped it away so easily, right? And of course, he's like extremely long, very, very long arms. He's able to just like reach in and do that. And then he just like takes it for a walk and like does like a bit of a layup kind of hybrid dunk. I love it. I love what he's doing with the Suns. And he just seems so happy and competitive. And I think the chemistry and like DNA of that team being sort of just like head down, really determined, serious, but not like joyless, fits so well with the player that JaVale McGee's matured into.
Yeah, I think he's like, I know for sure I've already thought about, hey, can the Raptors get JaVale McGee for next season to come in? Like, he's now gone from sort of like weird NBA oddity in his early days. Again, not really necessarily due to his own shortcomings. It was because he played for the fucking Wizards, where they were like holding guns up to each other in the locker room, which feels like imagine being JaVale McGee in that situation, like this just very sweet, thoughtful guy, and this shit's going on in your rookie season or whatever it was, like nightmare start to a career. The fact that he's now become this sort of exemplary role player that every contender is like, yeah, that's the guy for us, like that is as satisfying a role player career arc as I think you could hope for. Lots of really fun facts about JaVale McGee as well. He's got a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. He was, you know, he was starting his own reality show with his mom, Pam McGee. Of course, she herself, an Olympic gold medalist in 1984.
JaVale's also the only NBA player, he's the first son of a WNBA player to ever play in the NBA. And the cool thing about his mom is that she like raised him and his sister. And I think it's like they were homeschooled. She like coached and she did all this like while she was having an international basketball career.
I know. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His sister Imani McGee Stafford in the WNBA for the Atlanta Dream as well. I watched a couple clips. I never watched Mom's Got Game early on in the day. Never really popped up on my old DVR or anything like that. But watched a couple clips yesterday. The clip I did watch was his mom being very concerned because JaVale was hosting a party at his Beverly Hills home. But when she pulled up and her boyfriend pointed out, he's got security. He's taking care of this thing. It's going to be all good. She was like, I'm proud of him. He was smart about his party. He's got security in case anything goes wrong. Really, really excellent. Did you know that McGee also has the largest documented arm span of any current NBA player other than Rudy Gobert at 7 foot six and a half? Yep. Yeah, that's another little fun fact for him. Also, he is a record producer under the moniker Pierre. Yeah, he co-produced a song called Available with people named Pooh Bear and Sasha Sirota, who I'm sure if I was younger and cooler, I would know, but apparently was on Justin Bieber's record Changes. So he is a Justin Bieber record-making producer. Just a guy who's going to be just fine after his career, I would say.
Pierre. Like Pierre, yeah. I will clarify that the way, because I wrote about this like during the, I don't know if it was before the bubble got started again, but it was like in the kind of pandemic time because I got like some of the promo sent my way from agents. But I was curious about it because to me, like JaVale, Pierre is like his alter ego. So it's not the way he kind of approaches it, I just find really interesting, because a lot of actually like who you'd consider, quote, traditional or like fine artists do that too. Right. And it's like this idea of you produce like in a state of mind, like separate to yourself. I don't know. I can't say I listened to all of it. What I did was good. And I just think it's cool. I just think it's cool to like, you know, a lot of NBA players get made fun of a lot for like and some of it. Yeah, it's not, the music's not great. But I also think like it's very dumb to just to want to flatten people and make them one dimensional to the thing that they're doing at that moment in time, as if, you know, they can't move beyond that, as if they cannot do two things at once. Like, of course they can.
I also think it speaks to kind of what we were talking about, how he's become this exemplary complementary piece in his later days, that he is, instead of being like the front-facing artist, he is the producer behind the scenes, making everything sound good. Like, it kind of is a nice, poetically sound choice for him, I think, in line with his NBA career and where it's ended up. Do you have a favorite of his nicknames, Katie? This will be the last thing before we move on. JaVale McGee has many nicknames. The one that has been that was dubbed by the Shaqton of Fool guys is Tragic Bronson, which is mean and bad. There's Aww. Pierre. There's The Big Secret. There's Big Daddy Wookie. And there's The Great Adventure. Do you have a favorite of those nicknames that are available on JaVale McGee's basketball reference page?
Why has it also come up with Lemonhead and Epic Vale?
I don't see that on the basketball reference.
I mean, I like The Big Secret, but like,
yeah,
just because of how it sounds. Big Daddy Wookie's pretty bad.
Yeah. I really like The Great Adventure. That's a very good one. I think that's...
I think Dwight Howard was on a mic'd up once and he called him Kareem Abdul-McGee. might be one of the nicer things Dwight Howard's done.
Yep.
Yeah, he needs another one, but like Great Adventure and The Big Secret are up there. They're also great segues into our next segment.
Oh, baby, you're right. Wow, I didn't even intend that, but it is true. We are now going to move forward, Katie, into our final segment of the show, the segment we're trying out this week. We'll leave the JaVale talk there, but we'll never really be without JaVale. We're just going to continue to talk about him for the rest of time, I would assume. But yes, let's continue forward here and get into the segment we're trying out this week, which Katie has put together, and it is all about nicknames. Let's go. Okay, we have reached the segment we're trying out this week. And this week, Katie, we have a little segment called the Nickname Generator that you have devised. I will cede the floor to you. Please explain what the hell's going on with this segment.
Okay, so this came to mind because there's been a lot of chatter, I think, about what the new Warriors nickname should be, because you've got Jordan Poole in the mix. So people are like, is he another Splash Brother? The nickname Poole Party is getting thrown around. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, like I'd say not good so far nicknames. I agree it should be something with water. I feel like it should be Water World, but that's just me. Anyway, I wondered what are some other nickname potentials for other teams, either still in the playoffs or like duos or kind of trios or whatever groupings of players on these teams, because there's kind of like a lamentable lack of nicknames, I'd say.
We are in like a nickname nadir in NBA history, I think. It's pretty rough. My theory on this, Katie, is that the moment Kevin Durant tried to start calling himself the Servant is when nicknames died forever. And we need to get something going to turn this thing back around. It's so sad that he says
he's scared of Durantula, because that's a great one. Or wait, no. Is it he's scared of Slim Reaper? They're pretty spooky nicknames.
It is spooky, but it's also unbelievably good and really, I think, could have caught on had he embraced it. You know, and you think back, like the decade prior, You got the big ticket. You got the big fundamental. You've got Shaq Diesel or whatever 10,000 nicknames, the big cactus, whatever he was calling himself. Always very good nicknames. Like the answer, the truth. Like we're just in a really, really dark time when it comes to NBA nicknames. And so let's fire up the nickname generator, Katie. Do you want me to sort of put forth a candidate for a nickname and then we can kind of go from there?
Yeah, so you can we can go through teams and you can either like say, oh, we can say we want it to be the team or just a couple guys. And then the way I have it is you'll pick a letter between A and K and then a number between 1 and 11. And I have a sheet here and I will match the words and we will generate the nickname.
Hell yes. All right. I my hope is that at least one sticks for good out of this, but maybe multiple will. Maybe that's the power of UB. All right. Let's go with one that we might not really, might not have a lot of staying power because this duo might get broken up, but we've never really gotten a good nickname for the Donovan Mitchell-Rudy Gobert duo, Katie.
True.
So let's go with them. I'll go with the letters J.
Yep.
Is J in here? Okay. I didn't know if J or K came first because I'm a moron. we'll go with J4. What do you got for the Jazz with J4?
I have the Laughing Arborists.
So, I mean, Rudy Gobert, we just talked about it, the longest wingspan in NBA history.
Also,
he's a tree.
He keeps bees.
He does keep bees. He does keep bees. Which is what's the word for that one? Apiarist. Apiary.
Yeah. So but like, it's like loose. You know, it's around the same.
It's around
bees are in trees. Yeah.
Yeah. You could view Donovan Mitchell as the guy who kind of. I mean, maybe he doesn't really like the tree all that much. You know, if he was like a serious arborist, he would be chaining himself to Rudy Gobert, ensuring he's not removed from Utah. But instead, he's laughing because maybe they're going to remove this very large tree from the forests of, the outskirts of Salt Lake City and thus leave them barren, deforested, and headed towards the lottery. Laughing arborists, not a bad start, Katie. We're off to a good one. All right, let's go with look, Katie. The Memphis Grizzlies are a team that's very much in the news. Ja Morant had himself a game last night against the Warriors. We're recording this on Wednesday, and the Grizzlies themselves are extremely cool. Of course, the Grizzlies had an unbelievably good nickname with Grit and Grind for a very long time there, and now I guess it's time to rebrand the Memphis Grizzlies, this new upstart young fun team. Doesn't seem like they really have a noted nickname just yet. So, Katie, I'm going to go with the letters G for Grizzlies and 2 for Ja Morant. G2, what do we got? He's 12. Never mind. But either way, 2 with his. He's number 12.
2?
I'm
okay.
But go for 2.
We don't
two
go
anyway.
Up to 12, so it's okay.
Yeah,
so we've
got
the Dubious Snipers.
Also works because they can't shoot threes, Katie. They only have Desmond Bane. Everyone else bricking threes all over the place. Jaren Jackson Jr., Dylan Brooks. They got Xavier Tillman starting, and he's not putting up threes. Jaw's not the best. Yeah, I think this is perfect. The Dubious Snipers. you've done some good adjective and noun selection here, Katie. I appreciate it. Let's move on. Let's power through here. Let's go with the Toronto Raptors, shall we? They're not in it still, but they are this team that is sort of a novel concept in the NBA. They're long, they're weird, they're limmy, and everything like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go with the sixth letter of the alphabet, which is A, B, C, D, E, F. And I'm going to go with the ninth number, which is 9, because 6'9 is the size of all their players. Let's go with, F9 for the Toronto Raptors.
The argumentative Cowboys. Which also works when you think of Nick Nurse, honestly.
I mean, yeah, Fred VanVleet likes to talk to a ref. That's for damn sure.
True.
The whole spirit of the team is, we're going to yell at the refs. And you could argue that they are sort of establishing a new frontier of NBA basketball with the way that they're playing this sort of novel concept. And so Cowboys does kind of hold up, I would argue. The argumentative Cowboys. Let's put it in stone. Get the open gym people on that. Let's go. Let's do a couple more here, Katie, because we're up against the clock, but this is a lot of fun. The Phoenix Suns, Katie, they're really good. They might win the NBA title. They're up on the Mavericks. They got JaVale McGee, of course, the nickname Prince himself. What are we going to do for the Phoenix Suns, who I think have just been kind of this metronomic team for the last little while, and no one's really come up with a nickname other than, wow, they're really good. They're kind of like a machine, but there's not really been any good machinery-related puns put to their name. So let's see what we got in the name generator. The Phoenix Suns were the one seed, so I'll go I'll go A1 for the Phoenix Suns. What do we got?
The Fun Bricklayers.
Also could have been the Memphis really Grizzlies, work. Probably. No, it doesn't quite work. They're too good at shooting. Yeah. They're shooting like 90% from the mid-range so far in the playoffs. But hey, we're 3 for 4. That's not bad, Katie.
Maybe it's that they're taking the bricks from the other teams. They're forcing them to shoot, and they're building something sustainable out of it.
Yeah. There you go. This was, you maybe could have done that name for the Suns team that ended up going 8-0 in the bubble, but didn't have a great season before that. The Fun Bricklayers laying the foundation for Chris Paul to walk in and make them an NBA champion right away. All right, let's go to... maybe you pick a team, Katie. I've picked all the teams here. I've been running the show. Who do you want to pick?
Well, I don't
want to
pick because I... Well, okay, fair enough. I'll pick a team, but you still have to say the numbers, okay?
Perfect.
Okay. I mean, let's do the Warriors because, as we mentioned, I'm not satisfied with their nicknames they've done so far.
The Warriors, okay. I mean, there is something there with pool parties and moisture or something. I don't know. But yeah, the Golden State Warriors. Let's just answer this here. We're going to go. This is the new death lineup. This is the Steph, Clay, Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green lineup that has been eviscerating teams so far. Although I think the Grizzlies are kind of having their way with it. So maybe it's not quite the death lineup. Maybe it's their own undoing. Either way, Katie, for the Warriors, I'm going to go with the letter... H,
okay.
For no particular reason. And I'll go with the number 5. Strength in numbers, 5. What do you got? H5.
Wow. It's weird because it's you picked the only water related one I had.
Wow.
So it's a disaster. Long distance swimmers.
I don't love what that might portend for our boating friend, Clay Thompson. He's on that bay a lot. Those are rough waters near Alcatraz. I don't know, some dangerous currents there. So I hope that doesn't portend anything troublesome during Clay Thompson's nautical
Me
travels.
Too.
But yeah.
Let's quickly do the Heat just because of Larry, Jimmy, Bam, PJ.
Let's go.
Who I called the pest team.
The pest team, yes. So let's go with the letter, letter B. Have I said B yet?
No, you haven't.
We'll go letter B and number 7 for Kyle Lowry.
Sad detectives.
What team would the sad detectives maybe more that apply to? Maybe the Sixers?
Maybe the Sixers. Honestly, they're looking for something.
Yeah.
I will list a couple that we didn't get to do that I liked just because of alliteration. So I had like Furious and I had Freaks. Furious Freaks would have been fun. I have spicy snipers would have been nice, or I had sad snipers. That could have been good too. I had gentle warlocks could have been cool, or gentle freaks. Or I had, we did argumentative. Oh, terrific or somber personal care workers.
That's, yeah.
And I also had cineholics, but we never got to that.
Well, Katie, this is a segment we're going to be doing again, I think. This worked perfectly. Thank you. Shout out to the Dubious Snipers who tied their series with the disastrous long-distance swimmers last night. Looking forward to that series continuing on. Apologies to the trees in Utah. It might be the end of the laughing arborists. But anyway, Katie, let's wrap this thing up with the way we wrap up every single one of our episodes. Our posters of the week, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. And I'll go first. My pick is any NBA player who has been posting in outrage over the potential overturning of Roe v. Wade. CJ Miles has been pretty active. Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, has been pretty active. Anyone who has been using their platform to speak out, I think, is my poster of the week. Where are you going with this, Katie?
I got to pick Russell Westbrook. People think that it was a failure of the Lakers season that they got out so early. I think it was a great success so Russell Westbrook could go to the Met Gala where he belongs. And he looked great.
There you go. Well, Katie, with that, we are going to round up today's show. Thank you so much for putting together that wonderful nickname generator. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Stop making laws about women's bodies and let them fucking have bodily autonomy. How about that? Crazy concept. Anything you would like to promote, Katie, before we get out of here?
No, I'll just promote the same thing. Support women.
Support women. It seems like a pretty rudimentary thing to want to do. But alas, we will move on. We'll be back again next week, of course, with another episode of the podcast. We have a Patreon episode that should be up for you as well. A very fun one from our wonderful producer, Greg, who makes the Patreon and mainline episode sound so, so damn good. Also, my audio stuff is fixed for good now. I figured it out. So we're not going to have any more weird lost podcasts or choppy audio, baby. With that, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Basketball. See you next week. Bye-bye.